And welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Outsiders podcast. I'm your host, Gary Kester, and joining me today are two of my usuals, wearing probably the worst shirt I think I've ever seen, Jacob Rude. Jacob, how you been?
I'm doing better now that I've had some time to recover from that atrocious game tonight.
Yeah, luckily I got to see only a couple minutes. So Harrison Fagan is also joining us from, well, us and Silver Screen and Roll. Harrison, what you been up to, man?
Not too much. Just, well, actually a lot. But we're going to talk a little bit about Robert Upshaw, I guess, later in the podcast. And, I spent pretty much my whole weekend writing that report on him. So exciting stuff. But, yeah, and then the game, complete opposite direction. I'll get us into that. I fell asleep in the midway through the third quarter because I crashed. I drank some of Matthew Dellavedova's coffee this morning, and it kept me going for like 8 hours, and then I crashed hard. The Lakers put me right to sleep in that third quarter, and I didn't wake up until after the game when I got a second call from Anthony.
So Deli's coffee is basically 8 hour energy. It's better than 5 hour energy, though.
Yeah, it's way better than 5 hour energy. I mean, like that thing that has kick like a kangaroo has kick. That was like I felt like I could run through like 20 Kyle Korver ankles.
So say you could jump on like 10 DeAndre Jordans on free throw attempts.
I was ready for a piggyback ride.
I think we just killed any opportunity at 5 Hour Energy sponsoring the podcast in the future.
But so. We opened the opportunity for a Good Day Mate sponsorship. It'll make you have a Good Day Mate.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, we're off to a good start. But, no, as Harrison mentioned, we are going to talk about Robert Upshaw and the L.A. Defenders, the D-League affiliate of the Lakers, since they play a little more exciting brand of basketball than the Lakers do these days. But first things first, the Lakers actually played today. They were at Indiana. It was Kobe's farewell. I guess every road game now from here on out is a farewell for him. But last time in Indiana, and the Lakers lost 89-87. Really exciting finish, made up for really what was kind of an ugly game for the first, three and a half quarters. So, Jacob, I'll throw it to you. Just, some things that you liked, some things you didn't like. Just what kind of stood out to you in tonight's game?
Yeah, since I was awake the whole game, I think I can handle it.
I watched the first half.
I liked the kind of the way the game ended in that you got your kind of vintage Kobe moment, and then he just didn't stop shooting and shot the Lakers right. He shot them into the game and then right out of the game. It was almost kind of comical because he hit a three straight threes, Lakers take the lead, and then he took the last three or four or five shots of the game. And I think the only other people who scored was when Brandon Bass caught an airballed Kobe runner and dunked it home, and then Randall banked in the three at the end. But, talking about Randall, 15 points, 19 rebounds, absolutely owned the boards. And then Russell, for the first really kind of three-quarters of the game, really struggled, but struggled shooting at least. But, he was still playing well. He was getting into good spots. He just wasn't making the shots. And quarter, he kind of had a couple buckets. I know he had an and one off a nice post move. So it was nice to see him kind of battle through adversity and have a couple highlights there in the fourth as the Lakers came back. But other than that, that was a very, very ugly game.
Yeah, it's kind of
everything that you need to know about that game can be told using the handy NBA.com stats tool. The last 6 minutes of that game, Kobe Bryant went 4 of 11 from the field. Then Julius Randle went 1 of 2. D'Angelo Russell went 1 of 2. Nick Young went 0 of 1. Brandon Bass went 1 of 1. Kobe Bryant's usage rate in the last 6 minutes of that game was 84.6.
Wow. I believe it, though. I mean, I did, when I got home, I recorded the game, so I watched the last 4 minutes because I had heard that Kobe was doing Kobe things. And no, I mean, it was remarkable that he hit, you know, three straight threes and the crowd was alive and electric and all that's great. But then I could just tell on, like, the next possession after, I was like, oh, here we go. They just gave it to Kobe and the other four just went and stood in the corner. You know, and Kobe's got Paul George guarding him. You know, that's one of the elite defenders in the NBA. And, you know, forced up just a number of bad shots after that. And I don't know if he – I don't think he made any because he hit a three to put him up 82-79. And then that air ball that Jacob mentioned was the last Laker bucket before Randall hit that three at the buzzer by Bass's dunk. So, yeah, it's frustrating. It's great to see Kobe go off in spurts like that, especially with the game on the line, but, you know, then everybody starts deferring to him, and it's just terrible basketball, you know? It's really frustrating, but...
We're going to miss complaining about this next year, but...
Oh, I know.
No, it's definitely hurt the vibe of the farewell tour that, on the nights when it doesn't go well, you know, it's fun when he's able to hit a couple shots and kind of give fans that, like, throwback effort. Like, in against Minnesota, I think he scored 14 of their final 18 points or something ridiculous like that. But, and then he hit that huge three at the end of the game against New Orleans the next night. But it's just, overall, it's been kind of a sad way to watch him go out a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I was at that Portland game, and I mean, when you're a fan at that game, knowing that this is, you know, for me at least, it was the last time I was going to see him play live, I honestly wanted him to shoot a bunch, you know, because I was like, I'm going to have many years with these young guys after this. This is my last time to see Kobe. I wanted to see him be aggressive and look to get shots, and the Kobe I saw was a guy, of course, it was the second night of a back-to-back, but he was just really looking to pass, wasn't really looking to shoot. I think he finished 5 of 9, so he was efficient, which was, that was great, but just not the same Kobe that, you know, we've kind of grown accustomed to throughout the years, just a super aggressive scorer. So
he was plenty aggressive in the locker room after the game.
Oh, man.
That was for those of you that didn't get that reference, that was a reference to Kobe. That was the game that he called out Russell and Randall in the locker room after the game for poor defense because, you know, he's a guy that can kind of do that this year.
Hey, yeah, especially.
He stood in front of Paul George a couple times halfway decently and kind of slowed him down as he ran around him into the back bucket. But,
to the same effect of a traffic cone, right?
Exactly. Maybe even
Paul
less.
George had a great quote at the end of the game. They asked him how he was able to get past Kobe for his go-ahead bucket. And he paused for a second and he goes, well, he is old.
I was going to say, like, that's pretty much it. Because I remember watching that drive. I was just like, good God. Like, I mean, you might as well have had a traffic cone out there because Kobe just let him waltz right on by.
I mean, he is 37. He's not going to be able to defend at a super high level. We get it. You know, it just is what it is.
It's just weird to have him guarding the other team's best player in that scenario, knowing his defensive deficiencies, you know. So, but that's why the Lakers are what they are right now, I guess. So, okay, that's enough about another Laker loss. Loss number 820 on the year. I don't even know anymore. Let's talk
43,
about the other purple
11
and yellow.
43.
Man, the games are winding down. Let's get this baby over with.
It feels like 820.
It does.
I agree.
Maybe it's the culmination of the last 3 years or something, but I don't know. Okay, so we've mentioned we're going to talk about Robert Upshaw and the LA Defenders, who were in my hometown of Boise, Idaho tonight, and I was there at the game, which is why I missed the Laker game. And it was a pretty exciting game. I mean, the D-League's always fun because it's very, very offensive-minded. It's very up-tempo, a lot of threes are shot. It's D'Antoni ball, pretty much, and it's a lot of fun to watch, especially if you're there live in person. Harrison, I'm going to throw this to you. You, over the last weekend, did a report on Upshaw, and you've been kind of covering the D-League, especially the Defenders this year. Just kind of talk about what that report was about and just some things that you noticed.
Yeah, so I thought that it was about time in the season to try and catch up with Robert Upshaw, who's obviously a guy that's generated a lot of interest among Laker fans, especially since he was the last cut in the preseason. And even before that, I think that when he was an undrafted, when he didn't get drafted, people were pretty surprised because originally he was a lottery pick, and if not a lottery pick, at least a first-round pick. I think the lowest I saw him on most boards was like late 20s maybe. But most people thought that there was no way he was dropping to LA at 27, and then he fell all the way out of the draft. So when the Lakers signed him to their summer league team, it was a big deal. People were talking about summer league champions. This is a big coup for the team. And then he showed up in Vegas, and he showed flashes, but he was kind of out of shape. Yeah. And understandably, after not playing much organized basketball for like 2 years, he just wasn't quite there. And so even though there were reports that he had secured a multi-year deal with the Lakers over summer league, that ended up not happening. And so he went into training camp. He ended up kind of coming down between him and Sacre for that last big spot. And the Lakers chose Big Rob. So, or I guess they're both Big Rob. But
Sacre. I was going to say, you got to choose which one.
Yeah. They had two Big Robs, and, you know, they could only carry one Big Rob. That's just confusing to the rest of the team. There's two Roberts. You don't want to mess around with that. It could just, you know, like if somebody calls him the wrong name, that's just awkward and weird. So you don't want to do that. But so they cut him, and he ended up with the Defenders. And he started out pretty slow this year, but he was starting to come on. He actually had a stretch of games. He had four games where he averaged a double-double. He was getting a couple blocks a night. He was playing more minutes than he had been. And then Tarik Black and Ryan Kelly got sent down to the D-League for the D-League showcase. And so one game before the D-League showcase. And Upshaw didn't play a whole lot of minutes when they were down there because those two guys are, like, they're D-League all-stars. And they just look really, really impressive in the D-League, and they're just very seasoned. And so he didn't play a lot of minutes, but then he ended up coming down with a viral illness that sidelined him like a month, and it was really serious. He couldn't eat for a time, solid food, so it was pretty bad. And it actually ended up contributing to his weight loss, but I spoke with him. Anyway, long story short, he was out about a month. He's just integrating back into the lineup now. I think this was his sixth game back tonight. And he's looked better and better each game. I think tonight he stagnated a little bit at kind of where he was at the game before, but he's looked more and more impressive. He's lost 50 pounds since the summer, he told me. And everyone around the team just really credits not only how hard he's working, which was kind of a surprise because you hear all these reports about he's a guy that doesn't really get it, he's a guy that maybe doesn't really want to be into basketball, and it felt like there were some character attacks kind of on him in the media and things like that. And I just, being around the team, talking to people around the team, talking to him, he just, to me, comes off like someone who's genuinely remorseful, that he's made mistakes, but he was adamant, and he told me, you know, I've made mistakes in my past, but they've only hurt me. It's never been to hurt anyone else. I've only hurt myself. And he understands that he's in the D-League because of his actions. And, you know, you almost can't help but root for a guy like that, that just is acknowledging his mistakes. And he was the first one out on the floor for warm-ups the night that I was there. And he just, everyone around the team just raves about how hard he's working. He's just soaking up everything they're giving him and asking for more.
Yeah, and you know, that's half the battle because he you know, was battling drug issues and things like that. And just speaking from a personal note, you know, knowing people that have battled addiction, really, I guess, just taking responsibility for your mistakes is really half the battle with, you know, people who battle addiction. Just speaking from personal experience to people I've known, the longest time, it was always somebody else's fault, or it's, you know, it's because of this or that. You know, the fact that he's able to kind of acknowledge, like, you know, I'm here because of my actions, and it's on me to make the corrections and you know, just fix this thing and get back on track, you know, in terms of his, you know, not only his basketball career, but just, I mean, his life, really. So, Jacob, before I kind of go through my observations tonight. I'll throw it to you. Do you think maybe after the trade deadline, we could see Upshaw get called up to the Lakers roster for the rest of the season?
It'll be interesting. I think it depends on what moves they do make, who they have come back, anything like that. It seems like the Lakers kind of want to take this slow with him. They don't want to kind of throw him in the deep end or anything. Hence him being cut or being waived in training camp and having him on the defenders. So I think it'll kind of depend on how he plays in the next couple weeks now that he's getting kind of back into rhythm and whatnot. But just to build off kind of a couple things you said, I mean, it's hard to dislike the guy or really anybody who is kind of as honest as he has been with kind of accepting that he had made mistakes in the past and that's why he is where he is now, accepting that and kind of moving forward with it and trying to get back to the NBA and reading Harrison's piece. I mean, there were some quotes there about him wanting to be a part of this of the kind of youth movement the Lakers have, and I believe he keeps in touch with a handful of the Lakers players.
He mentioned specifically Anthony Brown and Larry Nance Jr., guys that he talks with a fair amount, and that Meta World Peace has actually continued his mentorship duties, I guess, to the defenders. He said that Meta was a big mentor for him and just kind of laid it out for him in training camp. This is going to come down to your choices, and you can decide if you want to make it in the league or if you want to – in Meta, as only Meta could put it, you can decide if you want to be me and go and punch a fan, or you want to be Kevin Durant and be like a really good guy.
And honestly, I can't think of a. I mean, we kind of give Meta a hard time, but I mean, there's probably not many people who probably better understand the situation that Upshaw's in than Meta does.
Absolutely.
So I mean, he's really the perfect type of mentor for him. I know a lot of people didn't like that Meta made the team, but I mean those are the types of things that they wanted from him when he was kept on the roster. So, but I mean, I hope to see Upshaw in the NBA at some point, but I definitely don't want him to be rushed along into kind of flop or anything like that in the league. I mean, when he's ready, I certainly think he can make an impact in the NBA. But, I mean, we saw in the preseason, I mean, especially from kind of a timing standpoint, he just seemed out of his element a little bit for a lot of the preseason. He had his moments, but there are a lot of times he just kind of seemed lost on the court. So, I mean, it's a big jump, and it's one he still is learning to make. But, I mean, I hope to see him in a Lakers jersey by the end of the year because hopefully that means he's playing at a high level.
Yeah, it's something to definitely keep an eye on, especially if the Lakers do find a suitor for Roy Hibbert or Brandon Bass, somebody, like one of the bigs in the rotation that can open up a spot for him or something along those lines. So, okay, so I'll talk about the Defenders game today. I did notice, because I, along with Harrison, saw Upshaw in Las Vegas during the Summer League last July, and I actually got to shake Upshaw's hand outside the stadium one night and just told him, you know, to keep up the hard work and that a lot of Laker fans are pulling for him, and he seemed genuinely, you know, appreciative of that, and it was almost like, you know, he was thrilled to hear that the fans were really, really pulling for him. And I noticed right away the weight loss. He has really, really slimmed down. From the last time I saw him, he was, you know, I mean, he's a massive individual anyways.
He's 7 foot. Giant.
Yeah. But he's really, really slimmed down, almost to the point where he looks, like, really, really thin. You know, almost like if he entered the league, people would say he needs to put on a little weight. You know, he's, just seeing him in person, he's really, 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 really slimmed down. And it was kind of surprising to see him at that weight, but No, I mean, he was moving pretty well. Defensively, the defenders went to a zone a little bit at times in, like, the second half of the game, and he seemed really lost when that happened because the Stampede, Idaho Stampede, really just had five shooters out there, so they had five guys standing on the three-point line. So he can't just stand right underneath the basket or, you know, it's defensive 3 seconds. So he seemed really lost when they went to a zone. But he had his moments in man-to-man where he, you know, showed great timing coming from the weak side and blocking shots and just altering shots. And offensively, he still, you know, certainly needs some polishing, but he showed – I was really impressed with his footwork. His footwork's come a long way since – the last time I saw him in July. His footwork is really good, and he does some things where he tries to go a little too fast at times, which a lot of young players do, and he doesn't really get his feet under him. But when he gets his feet really planted and he uses his strong base and just really uses his power, he did a really, really good job. I mean, his moves are great. You know, he maybe had a couple ill-advised shots, like some maybe 15-foot jumpers that were contested. But ultimately, he showed a lot of flashes of what he can be, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, one thing that I really, really liked was I was sitting right next to the defender's bench, and they encouraged him so much, you know, throughout the game. They were always pointing and telling him, you know, where to go, and, you know, you didn't have coaches yelling at him when he was messing up, and, you know, they were just so, so positive with him. And he seems to really relish that, and you know, it was just really encouraging to see that, you know, the defenders like truly care about him and his development, and really want to see him succeed. And you know, that was something that, you know, Harrison, I'm sure you can elaborate a little more on, because you've spent more time with the team than I have. But just the fact that they've really been kind of pushing him in a positive way.
Well, everyone that I spoke to around the defenders, there was actually someone that told me that they put it pretty well, that it's the first time that Robert's really been in a situation where people aren't really looking to use him. They're looking out for his best interest. Because with the defenders, their whole goal as an organization is to get people called up because that looks really good for them. Their goal is to get guys call-ups and to showcase them and put them in the best possible position to succeed. And he's never really had that before. In college, coaches are riding you because they want to keep their jobs, they want to get wins, and they want to get more recruits and all of that, you know, all that varying stuff. AAU, as we all know, is kind of a cesspool. So, yeah. You know, it's the first time, and yeah, everybody around there seems to really want him to succeed. They talk about how he's really taken to weight training. He's just eaten it up, like I said, everything that they can throw at him. And I thought it was funny. You actually mentioned the hands. He hurt his hand the night that I was there. And so instead of shaking my hand, he was just kind of clasping it when I said, what's up? And so when he's leaving, he's like, yeah, sorry I didn't shake your hand, but, you know, I have the brace on. And I was like, yeah, how did you hurt it? I saw them tape it up before the game. And he just goes, oh, you know, I slapped it on the backboard too hard. And and so I was like, yeah, you know, just that normal person problems. We've all been there.
Been there.
And, yeah, he seems like a genial – getting back to the teammates thing, he seems like a really genial guy that gets along with everyone. He was joking around with the sideline reporter, giving her a hard time about her choice in pregame candy. He went and he goes and takes photos with kids before and after the game. He went and he had like about a 10 or 15 minute conversation with just a guy who I'm pretty sure was just a fan after the game. And just was, when he was talking to me, he said that he feels like the reason fans want him to succeed is because they see his natural talent, but they also see that he's someone that's trying to atone for kind of past mistakes. And that he's really just thankful that anyone ever shows up to watch him at the D-League because he knows that they don't have to do that. And he just, yeah. I don't know, he just came off to me like a really great guy and just a good person who realizes he's made mistakes in the past. And, you know, from that perspective, like I said, you almost have to kind of root for him to get his shot if he earns it. And as far as his call-up chances to the Lakers, he told me that he still believes he's going to be called up this year. So I guess he's still feeling pretty confident about it.
Yeah.
And his coach said that he thinks that that's a possibility, but he's not really sure right now. But from my perspective, just watching it, you know, the team, Roy Hibbert has done a great job being a veteran influence on the younger players, but the team's been better with him off the floor. And so with his injury now and how bad a lot of the rest of the front court's been, I don't see why you can't give a few of those minutes to him and call him up, because right now, if he continues on this pace and someone calls him up, then as an asset-starved Lakers organization, you just lost a potentially young contributor for nothing. So I see the argument for leaving him in the D League, where they're doing a really good job trying to develop him. They actually just brought in another 7-footer that people around the team think is going to help his development, going up against that guy in practice every day. But so they're clearly looking to make him better, and he's on a plan with them, and that's good. And Casey Owen says that he talks to the Lakers coaching staff every day about this kind of stuff. And so they have a plan for him in place, and they're trying to develop him, but I just wonder about if they're developing him for another team at this point and what there really is to lose by calling him up, especially if you make a trade at some point.
Yeah.
And you free up an open roster spot. I just don't really see a downside in calling him up. And then maybe you call him up, but you give him a contract but for the rest of the year, but you send him down to the defenders every so often if he's not going to play to get more minutes. But then at least you have him under team control.
Well, and that's basically, I mean, what the Lakers are doing with Tarik Black. You know, he gets kind of minutes sparingly, but he plays in the D League every now and then. And, you know, I was happy that the Lakers put him in the D League this year, because I thought he was so raw offensively that, you know, he needed just a lot of game reps. You know, and it didn't even have to be at the NBA level. He just needed to play basketball some more. And, you know, I could tell that even though he still kind of looks like he's working his way back, as Harrison, you mentioned, he missed an extended period of time there, but I can just tell that he is so much better than what I saw in Las Vegas. He's gotten a lot better both offensively and defensively, and you know, he's slowly but surely he's progressing, and that's, I think, really encouraging, because a lot of Laker fans really like him, and he's a very likable guy. You know, for those people that have read up on him or maybe even met him in person, he's just a really nice guy, really likable, and you know, kind of his journey, I think, is something that people really making a pull for him. So be cool to see him get a roster spot for the rest of the year, but yeah, it's as it is right now, especially if Byron's kind of coaching for his job, so to speak, you know, it's tough to see him.
That's really a good point.
Really kind of call up him.
One thing I wanted to ask you about that I noticed when I was there was how much he talks on defense, which is, I don't know if you noticed it, but it seemed like when I was there, he was calling out defensive coverages the entire time when he was back on defense, which to me was really impressive for such a young player, especially because, as we've all seen with the Lakers this year, one of their biggest issues has been communication on that end.
Yeah, he was very vocal. Him and Ryan Gomes were both very vocal.
After you finish, I got a Ryan Gomes story. Go ahead.
Ryan Gomes seems to kind of be like the vocal leader for the defenders, I notice. And, I mean, in the D-League, he's pretty damn good, a guy that, you know, has played in the NBA before for a couple teams. And, Upshaw was pretty vocal. Sometimes he was vocal on the bench, some non PG-13 things, but like I said, he's come a long way just all around as a player from, you know, what we saw in Las Vegas, and I think that part's encouraging. So hopefully he just continues to take steps forward and just keeps progressing.
So one of the funniest things, and I think we've pretty much hit most of Upshaw now, but one of the funniest things and one of the best things about, and why I would recommend everyone go to a D-League game just if you enjoy basketball, other than how aesthetically pleasing it is. Gary mentioned they get up and run up and down the floor a lot more. It's really free-flowing, lots of ball movement, all this stuff that everybody claims that they like. In my opinion, people are probably going to kill me for this on Twitter, but I like it way more than NCAA basketball. Like, it's not even close for me. But anyway, another cool thing about it is that you can hear pretty much everything that they're saying. So yeah. I was sitting right behind the Oklahoma City Blue bench the night that I was there, and the Blue are, we'll call them, a very vocal team. and So some of that stuff I won't repeat here, but there was one instance where Ryan Gomes drove to the basket, and first of all, Ryan Gomes, somebody needs to get a Tumblr blog going of Ryan Gomes' reaction faces, because they're pretty priceless. So Ryan Gomes drives to the basket and gets a foul call, and one of the Blue players, I forget which one, he gets up and he goes, "Come on, Ryan, you know that was BS," and that was a BS call, and Ryan Gomes gets up, he looks over at him, winks and smiles, and says, "Yeah, man, I'm up."
Yeah, he. You mentioned his face, like his facial expressions. He had one. There was one time he was called for illegal defense, and he was like he was standing outside the paint, just outside the paint. So he had just gotten out, and he turned and stared at the ref, and just like it was almost like this: "I'm gonna stare at you until you change the call." But it was just like it was hilarious because he was just frozen. But no, it was pretty funny. But no, he played pretty well tonight, as did Vander Blue. Vander Blue had 37 points, and probably just because they had the number.
Vander Blue is not at the end of some team's bench is baffling to me. He's better than a lot of these get point guards that teams are just keeping as insurance policies.
Well, I was telling my dad, who I was there at the game with, I was like, I'd rather watch this guy play than Marcelo Huertas, you know. I mean,
that's
at least
what a
this
lot
guy
of fans have asked me. Would he be better for the team than Marcelo Huertas? And I think probably at this point.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's just basically a scorer, but, I mean, the dude can fill it up. I mean, I try and be careful with D-League performances because I watched Terrence Williams a couple years ago put up 51, and I don't know where the hell he's at now. but, no, Vander Blue, I mean, he was efficient tonight. He was hitting from all over the floor, and it's probably just because the jersey number on his uniform was actually straight this time. I don't know if you guys remember that Kings game.
The issue with Vander and the Lakers is that the Lakers are pretty set in the backcourt. And so that's kind of the problem. Like, if they were to trade Lou Williams to a contender, then I would have no problem with a Vander Blue call-up. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, as far as right now, it's just hard to see his fit with the Lakers. But he should be on some NBA team.
Can he be a catalyst like Marcelo Huertas, though?
That's a good point. I don't know that he has the catalyst.
No, you have to be at least 30 years old to be a catalyst.
And terrified to shoot the ball.
All right, so yeah, we've covered the D-League and Upshaw, and you can watch, at least from when I've checked in on it, you can watch the D-League games on YouTube, right?
Yes, you can watch every D-League game both live and recorded on YouTube. And right now there's a problem with their stats set. Usually it's like the NBA where you can look up players' individual possessions, but right now there seems to be an issue with it. I was encountering some problems with when I was writing my Upshaw piece. But yeah, the D-League stats site, though, it's great. It has all the same features as the NBA.com one, so if you want to look up all the advanced numbers, which is fun, or look at guys' shot charts, all that stuff, they have it. And yeah, you can watch it all on YouTube, which is fun for me from someone who likes to GIF these games. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, so let's run through some of these questions real quick. We've kind of gone on for a little while here. Okay, so the first question was asking about Upshaw, so we covered that. Kyle Harwick asks, after George Karl, who is the next coach to be fired? Jacob, go ahead. And we'll throw this to you because you haven't really gotten a chance to chime in.
That's what I was going
to
say. We got to get Jacob some touches. I've blathered on long enough. Let him take the question.
Jacob's going to go Andrew Bynum on us.
Half-court shots. I want it to be Byron. Not going to be the next coach. I mean, I don't – with the way the NBA has been this year, I mean, it's hard telling. I didn't foresee Blatt being fired. The Derek Fisher moves today kind of came out of nowhere. So, I mean, it's hard saying. I don't know. I can't think of anybody offhand who hit their team struggling. And possibly should be fired. I mean, maybe Alvin Gentry, but I mean, he's in year one. I can't imagine they'd fire him. I really don't know that anybody else will be fired.
Do you guys think it's going to be Kerr? Because I think they have more losses under him than Walton. So, I mean, I don't know that you want to mess with a good thing.
Well, I mean, that Warriors fan did have that sign on the
That's
Christmas
what I was right at. I actually don't know if that's true, that they have more losses under Kerr than Walton. I think they might, actually, but I'm not. To be clear, I'm being very, very sarcastic. I don't think that's the
fine. Yeah, Luke,
that was a hilarious sign.
Luke Walton's record 0-0 anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't really win, though. I mean, they could have just let Maurice Spates coach that team, and, like, how much different would it have been?
Yeah, the this NBA season, man, has just been crazy. There's going to be so much coaching turnover going into next season with just all these coaching vacancies coming up. You know, if it's not Byron, if Byron's not the next coach after George Karl to get fired, I guess maybe Randy Whitman from the Wizards. They're 22-27 right now and 11th in the lottery, so maybe. Most of the other coaches, though, I think are, like, I mean, relatively safe. They're either new, like brand new, or they're relatively safe. But we thought David Blatt was too, and you know he got the axe very unexpected.
Yeah, Tyronn Lue stepped right over him.
Oh man! All right. So Grant Goldberg asks, "What is the most outrageous thing you've seen Magic Johnson tweet?" Harrison.
Oh Lord.
Oh man.
I'm just gonna take.
You know what? I'm gonna go with. It's kind of a recent one, but I enjoyed it. It was. I think it was after the Lakers opening night loss. Magic Johnson tweeted like the Lakers lost, but Kobe Bryant and Byron Scott have them playing an exciting brand of basketball again, or something like that. It was either this year or last year, and I was just like, oh come on, Magic! Like, be more transparent.
Yeah, his tweets just get like more and more ridiculous as the next one comes out. You know, my response. I haven't followed Magic in quite some time now. Really, the nail in the coffin for me was the D'Antoni tweet, basically celebrating him getting or him resigning.
Yeah, that was
and
really bad.
It was like that looked. I mean, that just looked really bad. And then to openly criticize D'Antoni and he hasn't said like James Worthy hasn't said a word about Byron Scott's coaching. It's crazy. But
pregame tonight. Sorry, I'll let you go to this in a second, Jacob, but Dave Miller, without a hint of irony, they were talking about Fisher's firing, and they were talking about, do you think that these guys that are coming in without any coaching experience to be a head coach, do you think that that'll continue to be a trend or whatever? And so they were kind of talking about how as long as there are going to be 19-year-olds in the league, they're going to want players, coaches, and younger guys that have just played and have more credibility to them and that kind of thing. And so he's talking about how these teams with all these young guys need a young coach, a players coach, and all of this stuff without any irony that that's exactly the opposite of what's happening with the Lakers right now.
Of course.
Coach Dave Miller. Coach Dave Miller was saying that.
Coach.
I mean, they just seem so disconnected from reality. I admittedly couldn't remember many exact Magic Johnson tweets. I did remember the one celebrating Mike D'Antoni being fired. That was probably one of the worst. I believe he had a couple where he was yelling about Jim Buss and yelling for him to be fired. I Googled Magic Johnson tweets and got this one's a doozy. The only way San Antonio or Miami don't win the championship is if neither team makes the finals. So that's about Magic Johnson in a nutshell on Twitter.
Yeah, basically, you know, game 7 in the NBA finals, whoever wins this game is going to be the NBA champions.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you if we were playing a game called Guess If This Is a Real Magic Johnson Tweet, I would not be able to get that one.
Dude, I'd be flipping a coin to guess. You wouldn't be able to really tell.
We got to save that game for the off season.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do that on a podcast.
Yeah,
that'll be a fun segment.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, the last three questions are literally these exact same questions. So for those that didn't hear, Stephen A. Smith is spewing Lakers rumors again, like he
spewing's
always
a good
seems
way
to do.
To describe it.
So basically what he said was, it was kind of two parts. First part was the Lakers will fire Byron Scott if Luke Walton wants the job. Basically, if he wants it, it's his. And the other part was that Jeannie Buss was going to clean house this offseason. She was going to fire Jim Buss, which I don't know how she can do that because Jim is an owner as well.
Well, no, but she could. Also, she could fire him from that job. He'd still be an owner, but she could. She's the controlling person in the organization.
Okay.
She can fire whoever she wants.
See, I thought they had like the same ownership stake, but if she's got more, then yeah.
No, I think they have the same ownership stake, but her job is higher than his.
Okay.
She's the one that speaks for all for everyone, so she could fire him if she wanted to.
Gotcha. Which is just funny to me because, you know, Kupchak is usually the one making the basketball decisions. You know, and Jim, I think, is more so overseeing everything, but we'll save that for another time. But yeah, it's just basically Stephen A. was saying that she'll clean house, she'll get Jim out of his current position, and possibly fire Mitch Kupchak too. So basically, the question is, Jacob, I'll start with you. Just what are your thoughts on this? Do you think there's any truth to it whatsoever?
I'll start off. I mean, while we were doing this show, Woj dropped a piece about just kind of ripping into Phil Jackson. I can't remember the exact title, but it's something along the lines of, if Phil Jackson doesn't want to coach, then he needs to just leave, or something to that effect. But the interesting or relevant piece, I'll just read this real quick, but it says, Luke Walton is talking about the Knicks, is closest to a legitimately coveted candidate with ties to Jackson and the Triangle. He's still largely unproven. Says Walton intrigues Jackson, but skipping ahead a little bit, says there's still a strong belief that Jackson will eventually find his way to his fiancée Jeannie Buss and the Lakers. Walton will be competing with Thibodeau for the Lakers' job in the spring, and who knows, Jackson and Walton could be reunited there. I don't know if it's...
I'll say it means a lot more coming from a Woj report than it does from a Stephen A. one.
Yes.
Yeah, that was almost exactly the point I was going to make. I mean, even Woj speculation, you feel like there's probably something behind it rather than whatever Stephen A. Smith claims. But, I mean, I don't know that... Well, one, I don't think that she would, quote-unquote, clear house. I'm pretty sure the kind of, I think they've talked about this before, but they basically all have to be involved with the franchise or none of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would find it incredibly hard to believe that she would go through and clear house like that, because then she's...
Well, especially when she said he had another year.
Yeah, and she's kept with that timeline as well, which is a whole other topic, but I mean, I can't imagine that she would go through this summer and clear house. Regarding the Phil Jackson rumors, I mean, I feel like Mitch and Jim made it pretty clear prior to Phil going to New York that there really isn't a place for him in the Lakers organization, that they feel like they have it under control and there's nowhere for him to fit in. So I don't know where they think he would fit in or reunite or whatnot. I mean, I guess unless you clear house, but I mean, that's just so much speculation. And I thought Stephen A's whole spiel or whatever was bogus and dumb because it's from Stephen A, but there's a little more legitimacy for whatever it is coming from Woj. So I don't think she will. I certainly hope not. The only part I hope is that Byron's gone. But I think that if you bring in a different coach, everything's going to look so much different. I mean, winning cures everything is kind of the old added. I mean,
yeah.
We had this discussion a while ago, but I mean, this is this season and at points this year, I mean, you've probably been as low as the Lakers franchise has ever been. So, and there's lots of fingers being pointed. There's lots of whose fault is it being thrown around. You bring in a coach who wins 30, 35, 40 games next year, and suddenly everything's starting to look rosy again. So,
yeah,
I don't think that they need to make any kind of knee-jerk reaction like that.
Yeah, I don't think that they need to clean house, so to speak, because, I mean, this offseason coming up is a pivotal offseason for this rebuilding process. They're going to have enough cap space to offer two max contracts and then probably a little change left over because the salary cap is expanding so much. Plus, they could have another top three pick, and that gives you options, whether it's a young prospect or trades or whatever. So it's, you know, this is a crucial offseason for them, and I don't think just cleaning house and then starting over, you know, is really the way to go. The Lakers just need to rethink their strategy because what they've done the last couple years in free agency has not worked. You know, they're going to go after Durant, like, and I don't blame them. A player like that becomes available, you got to at least give it a shot. But at the same time, you better have Plan B ready to go right away because odds are he's not going to come. He's not going to, you know, in the prime of his career, come to the Lakers and join a rebuilding project. So they got to have other guys in mind and be ready to fire on their backup plans. So, when it comes to Stephen A., I don't really trust his Lakers sources or whatever he's got. When it comes to the Lakers, because the Lakers, people forget, they don't really leak anything. You know, Wojnarowski couldn't even figure out who they were drafting with the second overall pick, you know. So, I mean, I would trust some of the local beat reporters like Bresnahan, Oram, Medina, Ramon Shelburne, and Wojnarowski too. I mean, really, like, those five right there are about it. You know, there's probably a couple that I'm maybe forgetting, but...
I smell a piece coming up. Which trade rumor should you trust by Gary Kester?
Maybe. I mean, if I get some time. I've got a couple things I want to write, so I just got to carve out some time here in the next couple days. But, yeah, okay, so this podcast has gone on for quite a while, but... Let's go ahead and just squeeze in. It's been a week since we've done a podcast, so I'm going to share my screen now, and we're going to do a really quick lottery simulation just for the hell of it. So, go to desktop. All right. Can you guys see everything?
Yep.
Okay, so the Nets actually won today. They won by one. The Sixers lost in overtime to the Clippers, so that sucks. But Lakers sitting comfortably in that number two spot. So, all right. Let's go ahead and run this baby and pray for the best. And the Lakers lost their pick. Lakers dropped to fourth, so. And the Celtics, yeah, got the number one pick. So, yeah, I'm not gonna shout out Tankathon for like 2 weeks now.
Didn't curse you, Tankathon.
Didn't this happen last time? On the pod, too.
It's been so up and down. And, that's what you expect with,
it shows how little of a chance they have of keeping the pick. It's like there's not a huge incentive to root for losses. You just kind of got to hang in there and hope the young guys play well, and what happens, happens.
Yeah, and it's basically a coin flip. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Slightly weighted coin flip right now, which is terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all it is. It's a lot different than last year where they had an 83% chance, so... All right, that's gonna do it for us. We went a little long today, so I apologize. But thanks for everybody that tuned in.
We're giving people what they want.
we're giving people Upshaw updates, so that's a big deal. It's a big deal. So thanks for those that followed along. We had a pretty good crowd today, and same to those that asked us questions. Harrison, I'm trusting you to get this baby up on iTunes here tonight or tomorrow sometime.
I'll do my best to have it up soon tonight.
You're the tech guy for the Lakers Outsiders. So, Jacob, Harrison, thanks for joining me. Jacob, I recommend you wear a different shirt next time, one that doesn't have Duke on it. But, that's going to do it for us. We'll try and podcast after the next game, and we'll take it from there. So, thanks, everybody, for following along, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, Potato Boy.